Well, brethren, have you ever been on a search and destroy mission? I have a neighbor who apparently hates dandelions more than any other thing on earth. And every year he goes on a search and destroy mission for those little yellow flowers. Now, I'm convinced that dandelions are God's favorite flowers because there are so many billions of them. No matter what you do, they grow in your lawn. So I've learned to accept God's will in this matter. In fact, I've never tried to kill all the dandelions. Although, out of respect for my neighbor, I do a weed in the feed in the spring. And so for $20, I dump this stuff in the spreader and walk around my yard. And it keeps most of the dandelions away. But he is fanatical about this. And he will, on several occasions during the summer, remind me that I'm not. But we still get along well. I just tell him, Ivan, the wind has to blow the other way, and it'll blow all my dandelions on the back neighbors, not on yours, and we'll be okay. But we have a search and destroy mission, brethren, that we're on right now. And that is searching and destroying the leaven, not only in our homes, but in our lives as well. Today, during the sermon, as helping prepare for the days of unleavened bread, I would like to review with you the command to observe these days of unleavened bread as the children of God, that we might gain the maximum from their observance. I'd like you to begin with me turning to Exodus chapter 12. Here is the first direct reference to the days of unleavened bread. Now, there is an indirect reference prior to this in the book of Genesis when Abraham was dealing with Melchizedek. And they did have unleavened bread together. So you wonder if that was not the days of unleavened bread, even earlier than what we'll read here in Exodus. But since that's an indirect reference, we'll look to the first description of the days of unleavened bread directly. Now, one thing we'll point out as we read this is, when did this take place? This took place, obviously, when the Israelites were slaves in Egypt. The reason that that's significant is because God commands the days of unleavened bread to be observed prior to the establishment of what's been called the Old Covenant. Now, most people in the Christian world think that these days of unleavened bread were simply a part of, or actually were, the Old Covenant. Was the Old Covenant? Not at all. They were instituted. Clearly, God reminds Israel about them before that. So what left with the Old Covenant, when the Old Covenant was completed, what was not a part of it still is in existence. And these days of unleavened bread are part of those things. Here in Exodus chapter 12, of course, we have the instruction regarding keeping the Passover. But we get down to verse 15, and we have instruction about the days of unleavened bread. It says, 7 days shall you eat unleavened bread. Now, many times people have asked, well, we're clearly not to eat leavened bread at the Passover. So, why do we allow people to eat leavened bread the day after the Passover, before sunset, on the first day of unleavened bread? Well, simply because we're told here, 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread, not 8. I mean, you can eat unleavened bread for weeks if you'd like. That's perfectly acceptable. But what is required by God is to keep 7 days of unleavened bread. So 7 days, verse 15, you shall eat unleavened bread. The word for unleavened bread is the Hebrew word matzah. And it means that which is not fermented, bread that is not started to sour, started to ferment. That's the process that leavening takes bread through. It begins to ferment it and eventually sour it and eventually spoil it. That's the process. So God says 7 days you eat unleavened bread, bread that doesn't have any fermentation going on in it. On the first day, you shall remove leaven from your houses. You've all been in the process of doing that. Now, we will pause to make one other clarification here, and that is, when we read in the King James or the New King James or several other translations, "On the first day you shall remove leaven," the implication seems to be that you pack up all your leaven, and then on the first day, you chuck it all out. You carry it out on the first day. Is that actually what's being said? The Hebrew is not that specific by any means. But let me read to you the Young's literal translation of the scripture. It says, 7 days you eat unleavened things only. In the first day you shall cause leaven to cease out of your houses. It's not that we carry it out. Why would we say this doesn't mean you carry it, you work and carry it all out on the first day? Well, because the very next verse says it is a Sabbath day. It is a day of rest. You don't do any work on that holy day. So there is a small group of those who've been associated with the Church of God at various times who say, look, we have this big thing on the first day of unleavened bread, and we work that day and get all the leaven out. Well, that to me is a direct contradiction of the next verse that says you don't do any work except what you eat. So it's clear that the implication in the Hebrew is that you shall have removed. In other words, a clear way to read this is, on the first day you shall have removed leaven from your houses. That's the implication of the Hebrew. It's not nearly as specific as the New King James might say it here. So on the first day you shall have removed leaven from your houses. So that's very clear. We don't work on that holy day, but by that time we have removed all leaven. So Young's does a pretty good job with that translation. In the first day you shall cause leaven to cease out of your homes. No more comes in on that first day. Once we hit sunset of that first day, no more leaven comes into our home for those 7 days. Now, the Hebrew word for leaven, se'or, means something very important. It means leaven, no matter how you slice it. So it's pretty clear. On these days, you get rid of leaven. You eat unleavened bread. Now, the Hebrew word for unleavened bread, are very important. Unleavened bread, the Hebrew word matzah. The Hebrew word for leavened bread, chametz. It means fermented bread. Bread that leavening has begun to act on begins, as we said, to sour and then eventually to spoil. So any ingredient that causes bread to ferment would be considered off limits during this time. So again in verse 15, 7 days shall you eat unleavened bread. On the first day you shall have removed leaven from your houses. Again, houses means dwellings, your area, the place that you live, the place that you do your business, where you work, if that's the case. If you eat at work, you have a desk, it's time to de-leaven. Now your workmates might find that a little funny. That you, well, look, isn't the cleaning service take care of our office here? Well, probably. But is the cleaning service looking for leaven? Not likely. So we might take a few minutes to clean up our little work area. And that's certainly appropriate. This is the area kind of we live during these days, and we want to be sure this area is free of leaven. And again, the principle, obviously, when we look at leaven in a spiritual sense, do we want to be a complete Christian at work as well? Well, of course we do. So if we eat at our desk, not a bad idea to clean that out. If you don't eat your desk or your work area, that's not a big deal at all. In some cases, it's just not possible to clean up your work area. So we certainly don't want to be overboard with that. But for me, I sit at the same desk in the same chair every day, and a lot of times I eat. When I'm doing computer work, when I'm doing writing work, whatever it might be, when I'm on the phone, okay, not very easy to eat on the phone, but the point is, I eat there. This is part of my house. I need to clean this area up. So we get rid of leaven from those areas if we're able. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. The first day you shall remove leaven from your houses. Why? For whoever eats leavened bread, that fermented bread that started to leaven, from the first day until the seventh day, that person shall be cut off from Israel. The Israelites would eat unleavened bread, or they would be cut off from their community. Likewise, if we choose to eat leavened bread during those 7 days, we risk cutting ourselves off from God because we're directly disobeying what God has commanded. So we're told to put leaven from our houses. We don't simply refuse to eat leavened bread during these 7 days. We get it out of our houses. It's not right to stash it in a corner, to take a small portion of a cabinet and leave it all in there, then break it back out after the days of unleavened bread. There is a spiritual principle at work. Our desire, since we know that leaven pictures sin, and we'll look a little bit more at that later on, since leaven pictures sin, the symbolism is we want to completely get rid of sin. We want a totally clean house. Matthew tells us what in chapter 5, become you perfect in verse 48, even as your Father in heaven is perfect. We want to be completely sin-free. So we put leaven out of our homes. We don't simply stop eating it. We clean the home as best we can and move it out. Now, is it necessary to do an entire spring cleaning of our entire home from top to bottom in order to keep the days of unleavened bread? And the answer is no. No. Some people have gotten in a routine, and that's fine. They plan for the days of unleavened bread, and they do their spring cleaning up until the time of the days of unleavened bread. I mean, it's the whole thing, vacuuming ceilings, washing walls, things, washing windows and airing out homes. And okay, nobody does that anymore. I understand. Point is, do we have to clean the entire home top to bottom, spick and span? No. We have to get rid of leaven. So clearly the food preparation areas, the food consumption areas are probably the key areas where a Christian focuses their time and their effort in fulfilling this command. Now, again, our health and our age and our ability to get around all come into play in this area. Some over the years have been very concerned that I cannot clean my kitchen the way I did when I was younger. And that is true of anybody over the course of time. So, do we do it the same way as we did maybe years ago? And the answer is no. Do we need to hire somebody to come in and then clean for us because we can't do it in the same way? No. Do we have to gather the whole church together and we all go over and clean your home the way you used to? No. You get out the leaven, you quit eating leaven, and that's the principle. Is it nice to share the load and help each other? Absolutely. Can we do that? Certainly. But does it mean we're not keeping the days if we can't scrub down with a toothbrush the kitchen the way we might have? Okay, again, you never did that. But to do it that intensely? No. We want to be sure that we're not obviously doing an overkill. But there's a number of areas that I clean. As I mentioned, I always clean my office once a year. At least once a year. Because that's where I eat a lot. And so when I snack, it's easy for pretzels or whatever it might be, snacky food that would get crumbs all over the place. So I make sure my office is clean. I eat a lot of my meals in the car. So I make sure the car is without leaven by the time the days of unleavened bread start. You probably do as well. So we clean those areas, primarily where we prepare food, primarily where we consume food, because that's likely where the leaven is going to be. Certainly the kitchen is first and foremost. So we get rid of the leaven. And again, every time God has us walk through a ceremony like this one, cleaning out leaven, He intends that we learn spiritual lessons from this. We do not want the removal of leaven to simply turn into a ritual. It is a ceremony, but it is not a ritual. A ritual is something you do basically out of habit without much thought behind it. It's just the ritual that we do. A ceremony is a special event. You know, a wedding is not a ritual. A wedding is a ceremony. It's an event. It's something to focus on, to really look at. The same thing is true in regard to removing leaven. It is a ceremony that we do every year. And the principle is not about the crumbs. The principle is about the spiritual meaning behind it. as we clean those areas. We meditate on, and we can even be praying while we're cleaning and going through these things, asking God to show us where we need to change, what sins we need to remove. A reminder sometimes of how hard it is to get certain sins out of our lives. About how, you know, every year I have to take that blower and blow out my keyboard. Because that's where crumbs have somehow settled. It amazes me how I think I keep most food in my mouth when I eat. But you turn that keyboard over and shake it and you wonder, where did all this stuff come from? So Pam must be eating at my desk a lot, I'm thinking. So you clean the same places year after year. It kind of reminds us that some sins are hard to get rid of. We might be dealing with them year after year after year. Still struggling, still fighting against them, but they may be there. So we clean those houses, we clean those cars, we clean those desks or those offices or those work areas that we might be responsible for and have the ability to clean. We do not want to be cut off from God. And since sin is repulsive to God, we're reminded that we got to get rid of sin so that God is pleased with us and we're not cut off from spiritual Israel. Notice in verse 16 then, on the first day there shall be a holy convocation, and on the seventh day there shall be a holy convocation for you. So on the first and the last days of unleavened bread, there are holy convocation. And we've often talked about how the Hebrew for holy convocation is a sacred public assembly. We go to church on those days. Now, if we're not able to go to church, can we keep that holy day? Well, of course we can. But we should strive to be together with God's people on those days. I remember one individual gave me no end of hassle, saying, I want to go to one service on a holy day. It says holy convocation. It doesn't say holy convocations. And I explained to him that, well, on the first day there's a holy convocation, and on the last day there's a holy convocation. But on the last day, we also interrupt that holy convocation with lunch. So it's not two convocations, it's one convocation with lunch in the middle. And of course, he has no answer for that, but he just didn't want to go to two services. He's, of course, not with us any longer. Number 17, verse 17. So you shall observe unleavened bread. Now, the words feast of are not there in the Hebrew. But you shall observe matzah. For on the same day I will have brought your armies out of the land of Egypt. So it's clear that Israel left Egypt on the first day of unleavened bread. God says, that's what I'm going to do. So he's setting it up in advance. This is when I will do it. So God in advance said, I want you to keep 7 days of unleavened bread. Now, one thing that we'll just remind ourselves of in passing is that most Jews and any Christians who understand anything about the holy days will say the reason Israel kept unleavened bread is because they didn't have time to leaven their bread as they were leaving Egypt. Now, that is partly true, but it's also an absolutely incorrect inference. It supposes that the celebration of unleavened bread came after leaving Egypt, based on the results of leaving Egypt, on that series of events. What we're showing here is that before it ever happened, God said, I want you to keep 7 days of unleavened bread. Now, he would make sure that they could not eat leavened bread, that they wouldn't have time to do it. He almost forced obedience the first time around. But God set it up long in advance. Oh, and by the way, I'm going to spring you from Egypt at that time. Now, did Moses remember that? No, Moses himself got a little foggy on that. After the first couple plagues, what did Moses say? God, what are you doing? Why are you allowing us to go through these plagues? I mean, I asked Pharaoh to leave us, and he's given us more work. Now, God had set it up in advance. On this first day, that's when I'm going to spring you. I'm going to take you out of Egypt. But in the midst of all the trouble and the stress and the difficulty, he even lost sight of what God had commanded. So God set it up first, said he would spring them at the beginning of those days of unleavened bread. He'd bring them out apparently on the other side and the last day of unleavened bread, complete freedom from Egypt. But start by getting rid of leaven from your homes. So it was thoughtful of the Israelites to leave perfectly clean homes for the Egyptians as they left Egypt, which was very nice. So, verse 17 again, you shall observe the Feast of Unleavened Bread, for on this selfsame day I will have brought your armies out of the land of Egypt. Therefore you shall observe this day throughout your generations as an everlasting ordinance. I want to focus for just one moment on the word observe. Therefore you shall observe this day. The word observe is the Hebrew word shamar, and it means to hedge about, to build a barrier or a protection around. When they built a hedge in the Old Testament times, they would literally plant thorny bushes around their field. For what purpose? Thorny bushes were very good at keeping out animals that would devour your crops. They would protect their fields by building, by growing this thorny hedge. So to observe in this case means to guard, to protect. So we actually protect spiritual meaning every year when we clean our houses and keep the days of unleavened bread. We're protecting something very sacred. It means to beware, to be circumspect, to take heed, to observe these days. Watch over these days. So frankly, the Church of God today is the keeper of these days. I don't mean that just literally. We are the keepers of these days. But we also have a responsibility to keep them, the knowledge of these days, holy, to keep the knowledge of these days progressing, to keep it safe, to hedge about it, to guard it in that way, to protect them. So we strive to be sure that we're doing them so that we can teach others to do those things as well. Verse 18 then. In the first month, on the 14th day of the month, at even, you shall eat unleavened bread until the 21st day of the month, at even, for 7 days. So again, God makes it very clear. It's not 8 days, but it is 7 days. For 7 days, no leaven, no seor, none of the fermentation of bread shall be found in your houses, since whoever eats what is leavened, the same person shall be cut off from the congregation of Israel, whether he's a stranger or a native of the land. So in essence, God repeats the exact same thing a second time here. So anything that has ingredients of leavening in it is something, well, clearly we should not be eating. 7 days shall no leaven be found in your houses. So we do a search. We begin a search and destroy mission ourselves. We begin looking for those things that are leavened. Now, if we look at verse 19 one more time, it says, for 7 days, no leaven shall be found in your houses. Leaven is the source. It's what produces the fermentation in bread or other products. For 7 days, no leaven, the source, shall not be found in your houses. Since whoever eats that which is leavened, the Hebrew chametz, those things that are leavened. So in other words, we get rid of the source and the product in preparation for these days of unleavened bread. And so I think there's a spiritual lesson as we clean our homes. We might find leaven in things other than bread. And if it's a leavening agent, certainly we would want to remove that so that we learn that spiritual lesson that sometimes sin is found in areas or in things we wouldn't expect. So we learn the lesson as well, and we remove those leavening agents or those things that could cause leavening agents. Now, clearly we've talked in the past that if it is a food product, it's something we would remove. If it's something our pet eats, our pets do not have to be unleavened during the days of unleavened bread. So if their dog or even cats, I suppose, if cat food might have leavening in it, then certainly those things, since you're not going to be eating them, wouldn't be necessary for you to remove. But if there are questions about that, again, it seems to me to be logical that if it's something we would consume, if it has a leavening agent in it, it would be wise for us to remove it, so that we understand the principle and follow through on that. Then it goes on to say in, again, verse 20, you shall eat nothing leavened, nothing with seor in it, in all your dwellings. You shall eat matzah, or unleavened bread. So those things are fairly clear as we look through that. If you turn over a page to chapter 13, again, re-emphasizes this same thing. And again, oftentimes we think, well, God already said it once. Why do we have to go through this now again? And God says, because we're human and we need reminders. We all learn a little bit differently, so God approaches it from a couple different ways for us to get the emphasis. Mentions in verse 3, Moses said to the people, remember this day in which you went out of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. For by strength of hand the Lord brought you out of this place. Now it's interesting. We see that Moses is now reminding them. No leavened bread, no chametz, no nothing leavened, nothing fermented in that way that brings about fermentation process in bread. No leavened bread shall be eaten. On this day you are going out in the month Abib. And it shall be when the Lord brings you into the land of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Hivites, the Jebusites, which he swore to your fathers to give you, a land flowing with milk and honey, that you shall keep this service in this month. We'll pause there for a moment. Helps us to understand that when God gave the Passover, the days of unleavened bread, the other annual days, they were to be kept in their month. We don't have the option, let's say, with the symbols of Christ's body, the bread and the wine, the Passover service. We don't have the option of deciding when to do that for ourselves. Oh, it's such a meaningful service, let's do it every day, like the Catholics might. Let's do it once a week, like many Catholic churches do. Let's do it once a quarter, like my old congregational church used to do. No, the Bible prescription is keep this service in this month. God is God. He tells us when he wants us to keep his holy days, to worship him. So once you've been removed from Egypt, we're asked to abstain from leavened bread. So Christians keep this day because once we were removed from our spiritual Egypt, our old way of life, God asks us to be unleavened now. Then down in verse 5, it mentions the same thing. When God brings us into that land, we're reminded that even after they settled in the new land, they would keep these days. Verse 6, 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread, and on the seventh day there shall be a feast to the Eternal. So now we see from the scripture that at the holy convocation on the holy day, it is also a feast. So we begin to see that holy convocation and feast are synonymous with one another. There'll be a feast to the Eternal. So when we get together for the holy convocation, it is a feast. It's a spiritual feast, but there's also a physical feast that goes along with it. And that's something God is very, very generous in providing for us. Something that makes that day all the more special. How many of us have just absolutely outstanding and wonderful memories of grazing between the holy convocations on the last day of unleavened bread? Hey, we've got some toffee over here. You want to try some of this matzo toffee? Yeah, I've had 4 pieces already at other tables, but I'd love some more. It's part of the celebration is the feasting that goes on. Verse 7, unleavened bread, matzah, shall be eaten 7 days. Now, how many times has God now said, eat leaven for 7 days? This is the fourth time already. No leavened bread shall be seen among you. So none of that chametz, that which is leavened. shall be seen among you. Nor shall leaven, again, that's the source, the seor, and the chametz, the product, both of those things, none of that should be seen among you. And then it says, in all your quarters. Quarters is literally the word borders or territory. God wanted all of Israel to be free from leaven during these 7 days. And it was a picture, of course, that not only do we become unleavened individually, but as a nation, as a group, we also become unleavened. So we help each other that way. In verse 8, and you shall tell your son in that day, saying, well, maybe we should pause there for a second. A few questions that might come up when we talk about getting rid of leaven out of all of our borders or our territory or all of our quarters. Questions often come up in the case of a spiritually divided marriage. How do we handle this situation? Adjustments may need to be made. Some ladies, of course, who have husbands do not follow this way of life. And therefore, they need to be wise about how they handle this issue of unleavened bread, so as not to offend God, first and foremost, but also not cause undue offense to husband and families who may not live this way of life. Now, in some families, the woman is able to create such diverse and tasty unleavened bread that husbands and families enjoy it so much, they look forward to it as well. And so they don't mind going along with this concept of unleavened bread because it is so tasty and enjoyable. It's a nice change of pace. So in this case, she can observe unleavened bread like other members where both spouses live God's way. Can clean as she normally would and do away with leaven. In other situations, though, husbands may want their normal leavened products. And as a result, adjustments need to be made. A woman is under the authority of her husband, and as a result, he cannot command her, of course, to disobey God, but he certainly can say, leaven during these days. So, in that case, she can de-leaven as usual, but will need to keep leaven products on hand for her husband, and if he insists, possibly her family as well. She, of course, would not eat it, or those in her family living God's way would not eat it, because their first allegiance is to God, but certainly isn't wrong to provide it for, and frankly, serve it to husband if he prefers. I remember talking to one woman many, many years ago who had a husband who was not a part of God's church. And for him, it was an issue of authority and pride, and he was going to show his disdain for God's way of life by being sure that he ate sandwiches in front of her during the days of unleavened bread. And one of the funny things that she mentioned, I would clean the house and I would stack the leaven in one spot in the kitchen. And he asked me to make him a sandwich, and I'd make him a sandwich. And he would sit at the table and look at me as he ate the sandwich. And he would go, this sandwich is so good. Are you sure you don't want any? Until one time, as he was eating this sandwich, he said, look, I'm just not going to eat any of this. And he kind of got a little angry. And he was about to raise his voice to tell her something that probably would not have been very nice. And you know how when you're going to raise your voice, you inhale a little bit more air than you normally would? Well, part of the sandwich he was eating was inhaled into his throat. And he was coughing and sputtering and spitting. And she said that ended any discussion about leaven anymore during the days of unleavened bread. He still ate it, but he didn't rub it in and try to give me such a hard time about it. I always thought that was an enjoyable story. he's going to choke on his own leaven if he's not careful. So there are some adjustments that need to be made, and we work the best we can under those circumstances. So in some cases, we may not be able to de-leaven the entire house, but we do the best that we can in those circumstances. Sometimes we have husbands who are in the church and wives who are not. And again, in some cases, a wife is willing to follow the instructions that God gives regarding these days, in other cases not. So a fellow must do the best that he can under those circumstances. He will not, of course, believers partake of leaven during that time, and needs to de-leaven the areas that he's personally responsible for, but may not be able to do the entirety of the house or the kitchen or places like that. He does his own lazy boy if that's where he snacks, but the rest of the house just may not be possible depending on circumstances. So the point is, we're individually responsible before God for obedience. It is fruitless and usually destructive to try to force obedience upon others who are not willing to obey, and so we do the best we can in those circumstances. Let's go back to chapter 13 then. Now in verse 8, we began reading here, "And you shall tell your son in that day." We begin to get an idea that there's an important spiritual meaning behind this habit, because we want, God says, we want you to pass this on to your children. "You shall tell your son in that day, saying, 'This is done because of what the Eternal did for me when I came up from Egypt.'" God rescued his people from a life of slavery and sin. So we teach our children. We de-leaven because God wants us to be different. He calls us out of the way of slavery and sin to a way of joy and obedience. Verse 9, "It shall be a sign to you on your hand." That means you do something. When we clean, it is a testimony to our relationship with God. And he says, "as a memorial between your eyes." So we learn from that that it shouldn't be just a Pharisaic cleaning, that somehow we clean and we're okay. That's the right hand. At the same time, it needs to be between our eyes. There needs to be a constant refreshing of what sin is, what sins there are to get rid of, how challenging that sometimes is. An interesting and enjoyable thing to do is to sometimes, again, to think about these things. You think about various leaven products and what specific sins they might represent. Can be a rather humorous way of looking at this. All right, I've got this sourdough bread. What sin in my life does this bread represent? Now, I won't give you the things that I've kind of toyed with and enjoyed over the years, but how about a Ritz cracker? What kind of sin does that represent? There's lots of things you can come up with that way as you go along. But as you're cleaning, then it's again something about, well, I wonder what sin this might best represent in my life, in my way of thinking. How about this leavened cereal? Oh, it's so sweet. It's so tasty. I like to have it before I go to bed. What sins are involved with those things? It's fun to think through. A different way of thinking of it, possibly. "It shall be a sign," again, verse 9, "to you on your hand and as a memorial between your eyes." In other words, how we think. "That the Lord's law may be in your mouth." What does leavened bread represent? Sin. What does unleavened bread represent? Keeping the law of God. So that the law is in our mouth. We eat unleavened bread. It pictures obedience to God. Of course, much of this meaning would not be clear until the New Testament, where God then explains it more fully as time comes along. But we see that law is unleavened. God's law is likened to unleavened bread, that it might be in our mouth. "For with a strong hand the Eternal has brought you out of Egypt. You shall therefore keep this ordinance in its season from year to year." So again, that instruction, very clear. Let's take a look at Leviticus chapter 23. Leviticus chapter 23. We'll often read this, of course, on the holy day itself. But there's a few things that we want to touch on here as we go through Leviticus 23 in regard to the days of unleavened bread. Leviticus 23, beginning in verse 5. "On the 14th day of the first month at twilight is the Lord's Passover. And on the 15th day of the same month is the Feast of Unleavened Bread." So again, we see an indication here in the scripture that the Passover is on the 14th. It can't be the next night so that it's consumed during the 15th. It's on the 14th, and then unleavened bread on the 15th. But on the 15th day of the same month, in verse 6, is the feast of unleavened bread to the eternal. So the church does not make us keep the days of unleavened bread. We honor God by keeping this time. It's His feast. 7 days you must eat unleavened bread. And we'll pause there for just a moment, because the question has often come up. Must you eat unleavened bread every day during the days of unleavened bread? Well, we'll pause there for a moment. I always ask the question, why would you not eat unleavened bread every day during the days of unleavened bread? These are, after all, the days of unleavened bread. Would it not make sense to eat unleavened bread every day during the feast? Well, of course it would. Otherwise, these are the days of no bread, as opposed to the days of unleavened bread. In other words, there's a spiritual principle. We take a piece of unleavened bread, we think about Christ, His sacrifice, we think about the law of God. The law of God is in our mouth. It should be a part of the way we live. Now, would it be sin not to eat unleavened bread on one of those 7 days? And the answer is no, it wouldn't be sin. What if I decide to fast during the days of unleavened bread? Would it be a sin on that day not to eat unleavened bread? Well, of course not. I'm fasting to God. I'm trying to show honor to Him, trying to draw close to Him. Wouldn't be a sin. What if I am so sick with the flu I can't eat anything? Did I just sin by not eating on? Of course not. Of course not. But these are the days of unleavened bread. So why wouldn't we eat unleavened bread every day? There's always some kind of unleavened bread. Someone says, well, I have a gluten allergy. Well, fine, eat unleavened rice bread during that time. There's rice crackers. That's unleavened bread. It doesn't have to be wheat. There is a way to easily follow what God says. 7 days you eat unleavened bread. It's pretty simple. Is it a sin not to? Well, of course not. But if we deliberately say, I'm not going to eat unleavened bread, we got a lot more problems than chunks of flat bread. We got a whole attitude issue that we're supposed to be dealing with there. So these, I think, instructions are pretty clear. 7 days you must eat unleavened bread. If you're going to eat bread, any products that you eat, they should be unleavened. And again, there is good instruction in the concept of thinking about this unleavened bread and what it pictures every day during those days as we eat it. That's a good thing. Verse 7, on the first day you shall have a holy convocation. You shall do no customary work on it. So we can't be de-leavening on that day, because cleaning our homes is customary work. So we don't do that. We clean it out before the days of unleavened bread begin. You shall do no customary work on it, but you shall offer an offering made by fire to the Eternal for 7 days. The seventh day, and again we've talked more in the past about that offering made by fire and why in Leviticus that's mentioned, but nowhere else, and why that is not necessary to do today. The sacrifice of Christ took the place of this fire offering, so we don't need to do that anymore. So you keep these days for 7 days. The seventh day shall be a holy convocation. You shall do no customary work on that as well. So we see very clearly we are to be keeping the days of unleavened bread. Let's look at one final scripture. Sometimes this is one that can throw us off just a bit. So we'll take a look at it in Deuteronomy chapter 16. Now, I know all of our Bibles have a well-worn hole in Deuteronomy 16:16, but we're not going to read there. Deuteronomy 16 in the first few verses. We'll read the first three verses here. Deuteronomy 16, verse 1, observe in the month of Abib, keep the Passover to the Eternal your God. For in the month of Abib, the Lord your God brought you out of Egypt by night. Therefore, you shall sacrifice the Passover to the Eternal your God from the flock, the herd, in the place where the Lord chooses to put His name. You shall eat no leavened bread with it. Then it says, 7 days you shall you eat unleavened bread. So there's always, it's interesting, in the Hebrew versions of whether it's Exodus, Leviticus, Deuteronomy, Numbers even, there's always this nagging question is, well, boy, sometimes it sounds like the Passover is kept on the 15th. You kill it at the evening and you eat it into the 15th. You kill it on the 14th and eat it into the 15th. Some seem very clear. The previous reference seemed very clear. On the 14th, you kill the Passover. On the 15th, you start eating unleavened bread. But this one seems to think, well, do you kill the Passover and then eat it at the beginning of the days of unleavened bread? How do we clear that all up? Well, the simple thing is to go to the New Testament. When did Christ keep the Passover? He very clearly kept it 24 hours before the beginning of the days of unleavened bread, because he was arrested and actually murdered before the holy day began. So that's how we clear up these references. Admittedly, the various references in the Old Testament are sometimes foggy. Did they kill the Passover at the beginning of the 15th day? The end of the 14th day? You know, when did they actually do it? Well, the New Testament makes that very clear, because Christ himself kept the Passover with his disciples at the beginning of the 14th day. 24 hours later, he was placed into the tomb. He was already dead. So we understand exactly that series of events in that regard. So, although Deuteronomy 16 can seem to make it a little bit foggy, the New Testament clears that up very, very clearly. So there shouldn't be an argument necessarily about when the Passover should be kept versus when the days of unleavened bread should be kept. So, in this case, this is one, in my opinion, of those foggy references that seems to include the Passover in the days of unleavened bread instead of before the days of unleavened bread. Now, again, since it's a separate ceremony, again, there are two separate days on which they're kept. God does not have combined holy days with two different holy things on the same day. He has separate days so that we observe those steps in his plan properly. So again, verse 2, therefore you shall sacrifice the Passover to the Eternal your God from the flock and the herd in the place where the Lord chooses to put his name. Verse 3, you shall eat no leavened bread with it. That's a separate statement. 7 days shall you eat unleavened bread with it. That is the bread of affliction. Now, here's a new statement in the scripture. Unleavened bread is actually called what it tastes like. The bread of affliction. I'm just teasing. There are many, many wonderful breads. But it's called here the bread of affliction. The word affliction means depression or misery. The bread of misery. The bread of the afflicted I would submit the best translation. You'll eat the bread of the afflicted. Now, what is it referring to? You're just leaving sin behind. You're just leaving Egypt behind. And it was the bread of the afflicted. So it's not really meant to be a pejorative term, in my opinion. Although we often tease about how bad matzahs by themselves taste. It's not meant to be pejorative or a bad term. It simply means you ate the bread of the afflicted. Remember, you were the afflicted ones. You left Egypt. You ate this bread because you were the afflicted. The Egyptians weren't eating this bread, but you were, because you were the ones in slavery. So you eat this bread of affliction. For you came out of the land of Egypt in haste. So again, that phrase shows it's not disrespecting unleavened bread. It's simply saying you ate the bread of the afflicted. Because remember, you had to leave Egypt so quickly? That you may remember the day which you came out of the land of Egypt all the days of your life. So every year when we keep the days of unleavened bread, we prepare, we clean for the days of unleavened bread, what are we constantly running through our minds? What an honor it is to have been drawn out of this world. What a great privilege it is to know the truth of God. To know that when troubled times strike our world and our country specifically, that we have the answers. We have the stability and the strength through our relationship with God to deal with whatever comes down the pike, whatever we might see. It goes on in verse 4 to say, and no leaven shall be seen among you in all your territory for 7 days, nor shall any of the meat which you sacrifice the first day at twilight remain overnight until the morning. So he's teaching about the Passover and about the days of unleavened bread, the bread of the afflicted. So as we close, let's remind ourselves, what is leaven as described in the Bible? Well, leaven is any substance that causes fermentation in dough. Now notice I didn't say it's anything that causes dough to rise. because there are non-fermenting agents that can cause dough to rise. There is a difference. The Hebrew word chametz is that which ferments. Seor is a fermenting agent. So leaven is what causes fermentation or spoilage in bread. You can see why God chose that. What does sin do for us? It spoils us. It ruins us. It sours us. It eventually will kill us. But any substance that causes fermentation in dough, and of course, what happens is as that dough breaks down, or as that fermenting agent breaks down the sugars in the dough, it produces carbon dioxide. The gluten holds the carbon dioxide in, and you have bread that rises. And then when it's baked, it's held in that form. So yeast was the only fermenting agent in Old Testament times, at least as we understand it. So today we get rid of yeast, we get rid of products made with yeast. So bread, cakes, crackers, cookies, prepared cereals, sweets, all those things that contain leaven must be put out. Can items have fermented dough that was not caused by yeast? The answer is of course. There are other leavening agents. More as common today are chemical leavening agents, such as baking powder, baking soda. In other words, sodium bicarbonate, potassium bicarbonate, all these are some of the chemical agents that are used to do what? Well, not to make dough rise, but to ferment it so that it then rises. So the point is, can there be flatbread that has been fermented and started the process of breakdown? The answer is yes. In that case, the particular ingredients, maybe it's the wheat itself, maybe it's not wheat, but the point is there may not be enough gluten in that flour to trap the carbon dioxide. So it doesn't rise up, but it's still leavened because it's been fermenting. So the process, again, of sin is a fermentation process. It breaks down good character. It causes us to sour, causes us to spoil. So that's the principle. So occasionally there are flatbreads that are still chametz, or fermented. They're leavened products. So we get rid of those. We even have to become label readers to find out. So we might find on our pita bread or our flour tortillas or our graham crackers that, you know what? They have leavening in them. And even though they're flat, we need to get rid of them. And one of the greatest deceptions of all time is the saltine cracker versus the matzah. I mean, to put them side by side, you can hardly tell them apart. One, leavened. One, tasteless. No, they're both tasteless. Point is, they look virtually alike. And yet, one is leavened, one is not. One is not good fit to eat during these days, one is. So we understand the principle. Wow, sin is often that way. We can often look at something and it seems perfectly harmless. And yet, it will lead to sin. Other things look not so good, but aren't sin at all. So we don't want to jump to too many conclusions in that way. So when we talk then about flatbreads, these are breads that have not been subjected to the fermenting process. Now when I said earlier, can you have puffy breads that are not fermented? The answer is yes. You can whip up egg whites or other things that produce puffiness, but do not produce fermentation. What God was concerned about was not the puffiness, but the fermentation. Now, there are some who will say, well, look, I don't want anything that even reminds me of puffy leavened bread during that time. That's fine. But that's not what's required. If that's what you want to do, that's not a problem. No one's going to fight you and say, you have to eat this cream puff that is puffy even though it has no leaven in it. Of course you don't. It's up to an individual. But it's not sin in that. God is not saying, don't eat that which is puffed up. He says, don't eat that which is leavened. The chametz, the fermented bread. You don't eat those things. So many bread products are made without leaven. Of course, matzahs, for the most part, are all unleavened. Many crackers, many of you, obviously last week, made outstanding unleavened products that are tasty and wonderful. Can there be puffy bread that is not leavened? Yes. Whether it's homemade cream puffs or angel food cake or popovers or sponge cake, they can be light and fluffy, but it's not leavened. So they may be due to egg whites, it might be due to other things holding in air, but not the fermenting process. So those are things that we're aware of. Are there products that sound like leavening but are not? And the answer is yes, clearly. And that handout that we had last week or emailed to you can be very helpful in that regard. Things like brewer's yeast sound evil. It tastes evil as well. But it is not a yeast product. I mean, it's not a live, active yeast agent. It's a waste product, frankly, from the brewing process. And it tastes like a waste product from the brewing industry. Yeast extract is a flavoring, not a leavening agent. So there's lots of things that way that we become familiar with over the course of time. Lastly, is it possible to become unbalanced in our search and destroy mission against leaven? And the answer is yes. It's easy to become unbalanced. We can put so much emphasis on the physical that we miss the spiritual, or we can put so little emphasis on the physical that we likewise take for granted the spiritual truth we've been given. So we're always striving for a balance. De-leavening is only a physical action that is designed to help our mind focus on spiritual truth. So if all of our effort is on the physical without commensurate effort on the spiritual, we miss the point. So God has us become label readers and flatbread eaters, as we said before. It's the picture of sin that we want to get rid of. So as we close, a couple action steps. What do we want to do? We want to learn what leaven is. We want to learn what leaven is. We want, number two, to begin early cleaning it out. Begin early to clean it out. Third action step, study the spiritual lessons as you clean. Be interested in your list of what a chunk of sourdough bread might represent in your life. Number four, help others de-leaven, whether physically or spiritually. Do our part. We are a community of believers. We want to help each other serve God more effectively. So, brethren, we have about a week left before the Passover, the days of unleavened bread, the days of unleavened brigid. So let's properly prepare to be flatbreaders, both physically and spiritually before our God.